joining me for Artsline today is Dr. Richard Pettigrew, archaeologist and executive director and president of the Archaeological Legacy Institute. He also is the producer of the Archaeology Channel, which currently has a video showing that ancient instrument. When Dr. Pettigrew came to our studio a couple of days ago to talk about the hydrolis, I asked him to give us some background.
The hydrolis is the first keyboard instrument that ever was created. It is the direct ancestor of the modern organ. It was an instrument that was created by Ctesibius of Alexandria, who was an engineer. He was very proficient in hydraulic engineering specifically. And the problem that he wanted to solve was how to play multiple flutes, essentially a panpipe, in such a way that multiple notes could be played at the same time. And so he basically did just that. It's a hydraulic instrument that uses water pressure. There's an inverted drum inside of a water-filled vessel. The drum is filled with air through the use of basically an air pump. The hydraulic pressure maintains an even air pressure, and the air is diverted by the use of keys through the various pipes to produce the sound. So he basically solved the problem of constant air pressure to drive the sound through the pipes.
And when did he do this?
This was in about 250 BC in Alexandria.
And obviously this worked, and this instrument caught on, didn't
it? The hydraulis was used throughout the Hellenistic and Roman world in classical times. It was the favorite instrument of the Emperor Nero, who probably was playing that rather than the fiddle while Rome burned.
There goes one myth.
In the Western Roman Empire, when the Roman Empire finally came to an end, its use disappeared, but it continued in the Eastern Empire. During the time when it was being used, gradually the hydraulic-driven instrument was replaced by a bellows-driven instrument, which is much more similar to the organ that we're familiar with. But it continued to be played. It was very important in the Byzantine court, and was reintroduced in the West in the year 757 when the Byzantine emperor sent a hydraulis to Pepin the Short, to the French court. Pepin the Short was the father of Charlemagne. And this caused quite a sensation in the West, and the French court sent for Venetian monks that could help them to make these things. And eventually it became adopted by the church, became the official instrument of the church for church music. And the rest is history. It became very popular throughout medieval times and, of course, still is today.
Now, when we talk about the ancient instrument, how have we known about this instrument? Has there been fragmentary evidence? Has there been a complete instrument found?
Well, first of all, there's literature. Mm-hmm. There are ancient texts that describe the instrument, sometimes in great detail, as an instrument and how it works. But the instrument is also depicted in works of art, such as bas-reliefs, graffiti, sculptures, and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it's been well known for some time that there was such an instrument. But recently, in 1992, an archaeological specimen was found at the ancient Greek site of Dion, which is at the foot of Mount Olympus in Greece. What they found was the upper portion of the instrument, fragments of the pipes and the upper part of the device made of bronze, enough of it to learn quite a bit about how they were made. Subsequent to that, the European Cultural Center of Delphi decided to try to actually reconstruct a hydraulis, which had never been done before. They took the archaeological evidence, combined it with the literature evidence and experimental evidence that they created by making models of this thing. They studied the harmonics that the Greeks used for their music through the literature, and then they came up with this instrument, which is as close as possible to the original hydraulis of ancient time.
It's a fairly large instrument, isn't it? I mean, is it as tall as a six-foot male standing up?
Or I would say, yeah, even taller. This particular one is. But in ancient times, they came in various sizes. They were different sizes with different numbers of pipes. But the principle was always the same.
It's amazing to go back that far and hear an instrument so old, isn't it, Rick?
Well, it's really fascinating to me. You know, I've always been interested in ancient times from the time when I was a kid. You know, that's one of the reasons why I became an archaeologist. And I've always felt this wonder about it, what it was like. You know, what were people like? What was society like? What would have been like to have been there? Well, music is something that can help us to make that connection. Of course, we're very much interested in music in modern times. Music is an important part of every culture on earth. But imagining what music would have been like in those times is difficult. We don't have any texts which tell us, we don't have any musical scores from that time. But now that we have an instrument like this, we can get some sort of a sense of what music would have been like. Also, we know that this particular instrument was played at public events, festivals. It was probably played at the Roman Colosseum. It was played during official events. It was very popular music. Probably it was played by individual people in their homes as well. And hearing the sound of it helps us to make that connection between modern times and those ancient times. It helps us to see these people as human beings much like us.
Right. When we were chatting earlier before we began to record the interview, you talked about some of the fascinating links between the past, specifically this instrument, and the modern keyboard instruments of today with the layout of the keyboard.
That's true. This is the first keyboard instrument, and as the direct ancestor of modern keyboards, it has something in common. For example, the low notes are on the left, the high notes are on the right. This is a convention that goes back to the original invention of the hydraulis 2,300 years ago.
Your fascination with archaeology goes even further. I mean, you have indicated to me that you don't believe in archaeology just for the sake of archaeology, that it is something which is really relevant to all of our lives. I wonder if you could say something about that and how that led you to create the archaeology channel on the web.
Well, archaeology is frequently thought of as an academic pursuit. It has been for me. I've been through the academic enterprise. I received my degrees right here at the University of Oregon in archaeology. But for me, archaeology is much more than that. And well, first of all, I begin with my curiosity in the subject, which I've always had since I was a child. And following that curiosity led me into archaeology. And in the process of becoming an archaeologist and doing what archaeologists do, I've come to learn that it has many applications for people today. I think one of the first things is archaeology can help us to understand ourselves by exploring our past. It helps us to understand the diversity of human cultures. It helps us to see that there are many different ways of being human. By exploring our past, we can look at all the different things that people have done. We can learn about our origins as human beings. And we can learn about all the different aspects of culture, including music and how they've changed over time, and what we have in common with people everywhere.
You're the president and executive director of an institute, the Archaeological Legacy Institute. What in fact does the institute do?
Well, Archaeological Legacy Institute is a nonprofit corporation based right here in Eugene, Oregon. Our institute is dedicated to public education relating to archaeology and indigenous peoples. And our principal project is the Archaeology Channel, which is our way of communicating to the world.
On your channel, and it's on the web, the World Wide Web, you also have videos, and that's where people can now go to see this. It's about a 9-minute video, isn't it?
That's right.
On the ancient hydraulis.
That's right. We're using what's called streaming media to communicate with people worldwide. What we do there is we make our videos available in a digital format on our website, which people can access on demand. That means that you can go to our website, you can log on, you can find the link to the video you're interested in, click on it, and it comes up whenever and wherever you are.
Right, and there it is. Suddenly I was looking at this reconstructed hydraulis.
Yeah, I was very happy to make that connection with Vasilis Karismanis, the head of the European Cultural Center of Delphi. He was very, very generous in sending us that video and the information about it, purely at my request, out of the blue. I was very pleased that he would do that.
Anytime you have one about music or musical instruments, I certainly hope you'll give me a call, Rick.
I certainly will. And remember that web address now. That's www.archaeologychannel.org.
And you're a nonprofit?
We're a nonprofit organization. We're supported by memberships, underwriting, and grants primarily.
Terrific. Well, thank you for bringing this to our attention.
I'm very, very pleased that I could be here with you.